Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Talking Rugby Union podcast. And as alluded to yesterday, we are joined by a former Durham University player and current Sale Sharks, Josh Beaumont. How are you, Josh?
Yeah, good. Thanks, guys. Finally, good to get down here. And I know I bailed a couple of weeks ago, but that was because of training. But no, finally, really good to be here. And yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, you say bail out, Josh. You know, you had to get fit for that game. Was it against Leicester?
Yeah, so I was. Yeah.
Was it man of the match as well?
Yeah, Sale gave me man of the match, but I think the Twitter poll. I think Denny actually got it off the players. So, but yeah, I was struggling with a hammy a couple of weeks ago. My first ever hamstring injury, so I need to get right for that.
Well, that's completely understandable, and we're just happy to have you here now, so that's always great. So yeah, what is the Talking Rugby Union podcast? What is Talking Rugby Union? Talking Rugby Union is an online free rugby union magazine in which Josh features quite heavily once a month at the very least with your column. Why did you get involved with the column?
Well, obviously I've got a link firstly to TRU because I've grown up playing with Max here, Yeah, it's just something. I'm also from the Lancashire area, growing up playing National League rugby with Fylde, and also my link to Durham University, where I played there for 3 years, which seems like a while ago now. But yeah, so obviously you guys TRU covered that extensively. So for me, it's kind of a natural thing to do, is to get involved, and something I enjoy doing. And obviously the content that TRU provide, it's, I can't remember, have you got like 30,000 followers now on Twitter? It's so obviously it's one of the outstanding kind of Twitter or social media profiles out there. So no, it's good to be involved.
Yeah, well, just on that, you know, you get some players who are quite happy to sit on the fence, or that, you know, that they'll be quite short with answers. But with Josh this year, I've definitely found that, you know, he's really opinionated. He's more than happy to sort for stuff, and it just adds a bit of an extra dimension to our website. It's all well and good just going down to Carrington interviewing Josh about the game, but getting his sort of view on all things rugby is just help with our content, and we're really happy to have him on board this year.
Yeah, and of course the name Beaumont, synonymous with rugby. Of course your dad's chairman of World Rugby, and just got his knighthood actually. So how was that trip down to London?
Really good, yeah. It was obviously a proud day for the kind of family. We found out family in December, obviously had to keep it hush. Got released just after Christmas, I think. I remember we played Gloucester on the Saturday, so yeah, just around New Year's Eve time. And then, it was quite short turnaround until February it was, when we all went down as a family and, you know, had a good couple of days down in London. And luckily, myself, my brothers, my mum, we snuck an extra ticket and got into the Palace. So I think I would have been the first one out. If we'd only got three tickets, we managed to get the extra one. So we, it was a great day, and it was obviously the Queen was doing the ceremony, and it was pretty special.
Oh, that sounds great. I didn't realise it was the Queen. That was just gonna be one of my questions. So that's pretty cool. So
you don't know until the day who's doing it. And I think it was like the first week she was back from Sandringham in the Palace, so we knew the flag was up, so it meant that she was around. So we thought it was likely to be the Queen, but obviously it was a pretty special day for us.
Did you get to meet her, or was it just
you? No, just my dad. She only comes in just for the hour. It only took an hour. I think there's only 50 odd awards being handed out, so it's quite a quick one apparently. But he just had a brief conversation and then got shuffled on.
Yeah, of course. And your dad, very well known for playing for Fylde for so many years. And it's actually where you developed your rugby career. I mean, were you were a fly half or something before you went to Durham? Or?
Yeah, so I played 10 until the age of 16, I think. And it was actually, I remember it was a Fylde core, they called it at the time. It was a centre of rugby excellence. So it was like guys who were 15 to 18. It was like their academy system. And Dave Wilkes and Alan Holmes were the coaches there, as well as they played at Fylde. And I think it was Wilkes and Holmes, he just came to me and said, look, I think you should move to the second row, or move to the forwards. Said, I think you wasted trying to make it as a 10, which is true, because I was, if I'd stayed in the backs, I mean, there's no way I could have pushed on to any decent level of rugby, even National League kind of standard. So, moved to the forwards and just kind of developed from there. And yeah, I think I remember my lower sixth year at Arnold School, played a bit in the backs and a bit in the forwards, and then when I was 18 just moved completely to the forwards.
Because I mean, you was how tall are you? About 6'7".
Yeah, it was game. Like, I think it was like one summer where I grew ridiculous amounts, and it was kind of silly that I was putting up bombs as a 10. So
so you stood out, is what we'll say. Yeah. But of course, I mean, you're still really involved with Fylde. Warren Spragg's the head coach, and he's an academy coach as well at Sale Sharks. I mean, do you talk to him a lot about the club?
Yeah, I do actually. I think he's always a bit. He always avoids me on a Monday if I'd have lost, because I've probably had it in the ear from my dad about how rubbish they were at the weekend. So I think he's probably had it on the Saturday from my dad, and he knows that I'm going to ask him questions on the Monday. But yeah, it's actually. Before, when Spraggy wasn't there, I probably had a couple of years where I didn't get to see them. Because I've only been to one game, I think, this year. It's quite hard when we've been playing Saturdays to get down and watch them. So I haven't seen too much of the games this year. But obviously, having Spraggy there, I talked to him a lot about what's going on. And obviously, the dual reg players, the academy boys, I like to chat to them about how it's been going. So, no, it's had a good season so far. They've built on from... Obviously disappointed to get relegated last year, but I think they had a young squad, and you know, they're playing some good rugby this year under Spraggy.
Yeah, of course. And Chris, you'll know the names better than me, which is, I mean, name the players that are on loan at Fylde from Sale, if you could.
I think off the top of my head, you put me in the spot a bit here, Joe.
We've got two props. We've got Bevan Rod, Cal Ford. So they're good. Kind of, they're only 18, so playing at that level's invaluable for them, really. It's so we've got those two, and then I think Gus wore at nine. So Gus started playing in the Premiership at the start of the year, just because we only had two or three nines at the time. So Gus at nine, and then Sam, Dougie in the back row, who's been impressive. He'll be a good player, and yeah, he can play all across the back row, which helps. So I don't think there's any more.
I think that might be it. Sure, Warren will be able to.
Yeah, and I think it's just those four at the moment.
Do you see a difference in those players when they come back after a weekend playing for Fylde, or have you seen them continuously get better throughout the season?
I've definitely seen them continuously get better during the season. I know that Bevan was injured at the start of the year, and in his first couple of training sessions, I thought he's gonna be a good player. You can just tell straight away he's quite physical for his age. But yeah, it's just seen a progression, and I think Dougie's played all the Prem Cup games the majority this year, and Gus obviously played Premiership, so you can see the progression straight away. It's a tough ask sometimes coming straight from schoolboy rugby into straight into senior squad training, never mind kind of them playing senior matches. So yeah, you can see they're improving. I think the key thing is for these guys just to keep playing rugby. It's something that I benefited from massively, and that's partly why I went the university route. It's just so I could continue developing and just playing rugby. So I think some clubs, they don't play enough rugby at that age. And yeah, I think it's something good at Sale that all the lads are on loan at local clubs, whether it's Hoppers, Sedgley, Kieran Booves at Colding, obviously all the lads at Sale FC. So just get them playing as much as possible and exposed to senior rugby.
Yeah, and is that something Steve Diamond emphasises, that he wants these players to go down to lower levels and play as much rugby as possible as they're developing?
Yeah, definitely. I think something Diamond firmly believes in is that they've got to get used to playing men's rugby, because it is different. Even a jump, I found a jump playing university rugby to going back on a Saturday and playing National League rugby, there is a big jump in just physicality. And so just getting them used to that, and it's just going to help with their development.
Yeah, I mean, we were lucky to catch a word with Dimes just before Christmas, and I think he just echoed what Josh has just said there, that these players, you know, going out on loan, and they're not just, you know, filling the squads, they're not just sitting on the bench, they're getting 80 minutes, or, you know, 80 minutes every week, and it's just invaluable for their development. And one of the things he did touch on, and Josh mentioned it there, is the Sale FC link. The last couple of years, you know, they were in National 2 North, got promoted, they're in National 1 at the moment. That link's continued to develop, and you're just seeing all these young players who, Kieran Wilkinson's I think is a great example, you know, England under 20s the last couple of weeks, he's been playing for Sale FC this season, but he's also developing in the first team with Sale in Europe. And it's just that sort of structure for these young players at this age, I think, is really, really helpful. And it's great to see the likes of Dimes on board, Warren Spragg really playing a key part in that. So for a Premiership club to have that sort of commitment to the lower leagues and to university rugby as well is only going to benefit these young players.
Yeah, and we look at, like, there's two very key players that I'm going to mention now who were very young when they made their National Clubs Association debut in the Curry Twins. I mean, how old were they when they first came into the squad? Like 18 or something like that?
Yeah, I remember, I think, well, yeah, they definitely first, they played the first game around October time, I think, for the first team. I remember Tom scored. He's one of the youngest scorers in the Premiership, I think, down at Bristol away. This was, two or three years ago now. So, but they started, obviously, at Sale FC. So just getting him just keep playing rugby as soon as possible, really, at that senior level. I think it's important as well that you need to manage these guys. You can't have them playing. I think there's a fine balance. You can't have them playing too much rugby. You need to watch the training loads as well, because doubling up on a Tuesday, full senior train at Sale, and then having to go travel at some point, sometimes, especially to Fylde, and it's quite a long trip for them, and then to train in the evenings. But I think that's where the benefit, especially at Sale FC, because Briggsy's obviously playing and coaching and watching them train. So if they've done too much, and they can be told, I don't know if it happens, but hopefully it does, not to overload the training that night. So, and obviously, like Arnie at Preston, there's a couple lads there, so Arnie's pretty switched on with that kind of thing anyway. So, it's that balance, but just getting them playing rugby, really.
Yeah, just a great point you make, Joe, and on the Curry Twins. And I think Josh was right that they made the debut for Sale FC as well a couple of years ago. I think I was there against Otley, and all the talk was in the stand. They got the team sheet for it, and oh, these Curry Twins are supposed to be really good. And obviously, from my point of view, I didn't really know too much about them, but straight away they were absolutely outstanding, and you knew they were going to have big future. Sale FC is still a great place for these lads to develop, and the Curry Twins are fine example.
Yeah, because I remember, I don't know if you remember, a guy called Jamie Bache, who was captain at Captain Durham a couple of years after I left, but he started playing for Sale FC, and obviously I kept in touch with him because we're good mates from uni. So he was playing for Sale FC, and I remember him just texting me after a game saying these two are going to be a real deal, and they are. So it was, obviously they shone from that young age.
Yeah, because I came across the Curry Twins in a very different way, in that I was at the Prem Sevens at the Rico. That was years ago as well, and I think I found out they were younger than me, and I was like only 17 or something like that. So that was kind of a shock to me. So, you know, they always had the world at their feet, and they're really proving it now. And we'll get on to Tom probably in a bit later when we talk about some Six Nations stuff. But yeah, I mean, what's coming through Sale, is it great to know that Dimes wants a lot of the first team squad to be Northwest developed?
I think definitely, yeah. I think as a kind of strategic business plan of where the club wants to go, it certainly gives the club an identity when you've got the majority, it's never going to be the majority, but when you've got a large proportion of the squad from the Northwest, I think it gives it the club more of an identity in terms of trying to grow the club, sell more tickets. If fans see that there's more local talent playing every weekend, and it's certainly going to be beneficial for the club. And Sale have always produced players, whether other clubs, we've got obviously a big catchment area in the Northwest here, but there's also a lot of competition with two of the biggest football clubs right on our doorstep in the world, rugby league as well. So there is a lot of competition, but a lot of sports gets played in the Northwest, and there's a lot of talent. So I think you're always going to see, obviously you've got some good schools in the area as well that are affiliated with, so you're always going to get these lads coming through, and it's about how you develop them, how you coach them, and then also how to give them the opportunity. And a lot of players you just see kind of fall through the system at times just because they don't play enough rugby, and they don't get to that level, and they often have to drop down to the Championship and rebuild from there. So,
would you say you started the trend then at Sale then, Josh? Because you're still quite young yourself. You've got Sam James, and then you've got all these sort of players below you, and 20, 21. So for you, that must still be quite encouraging that you were one of the young players to begin with, but now you're seeing all these other lads come through.
Yeah, definitely. And I always look I obviously speak to the academy coaches because we'll sign a few players each season. I'm like, who signed this year? What positions? Who to look out for? So I always do keep an eye. And I think obviously this year we've had quite a large crop come through. I mean, it's about eight of them, I think, maybe more, who signed in the summer. And obviously likes of Wilco, who's played last year, but then it's his almost first year, so he's a first year graduate of the academy, and he's been going well. Cam Redpath, who got injured last season, so we've not seen the best of him yet, but he'll be a real talent. And obviously the guys we mentioned before as well. So yeah, and then it does keep coming each year. There'll be more competition, and so it's interesting. It's something that it's good to see when they do come through and take their opportunities.
Right, and now I've had a bit of a rejig of the panel. Chris has left us to just go do some work. I think there's a big interview actually that's coming out relatively soon. And we're joined now by Max Ashcroft, who wasn't with us for the NCAA Rugby podcast.
I was missing it.
Yeah, he had to go train. Bloody nuisance, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah, so Max actually has a very specific question to ask Josh about playing for Sale Sharks.
Yeah, Josh, want to know sort of your opinion. Obviously, Sale have had issues with attendance levels sometimes over the weekends playing, and you know what they've tried doing it Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays. So, what days do you find that's the best crowd getting to Sale over the weekend?
Yeah, because I've obviously been there 6 years now, so it's kind of alternated every year. You go Friday night, oh no, we're playing Saturday afternoons now. Quite rare, on the odd occasion we play Sunday afternoons, but before the start of the season, I was delighted that we were going back to Saturday afternoons. Yeah. Because I found last year, I know it's not an attendance point of view, but the weather was always rubbish on a Friday night for some reason. Yeah. When we play, it often is rubbish around Manchester, but it just... The standard of play was poor, where Saturday afternoons I felt in the light it was just a bit better, like it suited our game a bit more. But I've changed now, I've gone back to Friday night games I played this year. The atmosphere has been the best. I think Saracens at home just after New Year. Now, a couple of contributing factors to that, the fact it was still school holidays, so the roads weren't as busy, meant transport was easier getting in, there was less traffic, and obviously it was still in the holiday period. And Saracens were, obviously the champions were coming to town, so we had about 7,500, 8,000 there, and that was one of the best atmospheres I played in at Sale. But then even last Friday against Leicester, it was a decent atmosphere, and I found the crowds actually have been quite poor on Saturday afternoons when we played. So for me, I'd say Friday nights are I think probably is what we're looking at. And I know from a corporate point of view, they can sell the hospitality far easier on the Friday night. Get all the business in Manchester who see it as a good kind of way to end the week, go down to Sale. And I think the transport issue is the main thing that has been holding us back on a Friday night, but hopefully with a new bridge, which does help, and when the Met comes into the Trafford Centre, then that should alleviate kind of a few issues. It's still going to be a problem, but I think it's much better position than what it's been kind of 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's good also just if Sale make a name for themselves, just having that Friday night sort of game to them, you know, it's a tough place to go and play. Not many teams like going and playing over on a Friday night there. So it's,
I think from the on-pitch performance kind of thing, it's harder on Friday nights for teams to come up and then they might get there and it seems a bit soulless. The sewers are just over the road and you just come out and you're like, this is a bit grim, but we're used to that. So I think that probably helps, is that team, it is harder to travel. I know from doing it at other grounds, it is, you spend all day in a hotel. So I think Friday nights I've enjoyed more this year than the Saturday afternoons.
And one side that really didn't enjoy it was your last visitors to the AJ Bell. Leicester Tigers, not a great performance by them, but a great performance by you guys in the end.
I don't think it was a great performance by both sides. The first half was pretty poor. Leicester had a load of injuries and they fronted up pretty well that first half, and we didn't perform that well, but we got into gear a bit in the second half. And yeah, as we I'd call it more a professional job. We got the bonus point, but we know there's still a lot more to improve on, especially for this weekend.
Yeah, because you guys are still very much in the hunt for like top four or top six minimum, and then also in the Challenge Cup as well. So this weekend away at St James's Park, I mean, that's going to be a pretty good occasion, right?
Yeah, so I was just saying before to Max that kind of it's a game that I saw in the fixture calendar early on. Just because... it's very rare you get to play in these big kind of stadiums and there'll be a huge crowd there. I think they got 30,000 there last year. It's hopefully a similar crowd. There's no football game on up there this weekend, so hopefully get a few extra kind of locals going to watch the game. And also it's for a great cause as well, I think, for the Doddy Weir Foundation, a lot of the proceeds go into. So it should be a great occasion.
Yeah, of course. Are you a big football fan then?
Yeah, I'm big Blackburn Rovers fan, so I've been a bit of a turncoat this year because I literally live around the corner from Old Trafford, so I've managed to sneak a couple of their games in. So I've actually been to watch them more than Blackburn, which is a bit. I know my fellow Rovers fans won't be happy with that.
Imagine a Sale Sharks game at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I think it would be.
It sounds great, but it's a big stadium. and you've really got to have a good marketing team, like, which we do, but I think you need to extend, you'd have to pass the buck on in terms of you need to bring in extra help to kind of really, because it's hard when
it's empty, do you?
Yeah, you might get 30,000 there, but it'll seem like not, it'll seem like the same as the AJ Bell, because
that's less than half full,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. So you better go into the Etihad where it's a bit smaller, and you know, you can, I don't know, it's a tough one, because it's as great as it sounds, like, it'd be amazing, but it's, you, I think you really got to, it's a lot of tickets to sell.
Yeah, and of course, like, Sale Shark's not in like the ideal location with all the rugby league, like we were saying before, actually. Like, obviously, we see the, which final is it? It's Old Trafford in rugby league.
It's the grand final.
The grand final. Yeah. So that's the only time it ever really gets sold out for a rugby game. Anfield, of course, now a venue as well. I mean, you're going to the big weekend, aren't you?
Yeah, for the Magic weekend. Yeah. I'm going to make a day out of that. On
because I think when the Rugby League World Cup comes as well, I think Old Trafford, Anfield, they're all. I think, is it Macron as well, might be being used. So
yeah, I went and watched the Rugby League at Anfield in the summer, and it was a great day out. I thought they did it really well there. So yeah, it's a good venue to get some rugby at.
Anyway, we digress. Yeah. Sale Sharks, what was the kind of, what did you set out at the start of the season to achieve? Obviously, pretty superstar squad, really.
Yeah, we didn't really set any, we've done it in the past where we've set targets in terms of where we want to get to. I think last year, we were obviously gutted with the way we finished the season. We were kind of disappointed with ourselves that we were in the top six, and it came down to the last game of the season, and Leicester came down and dominated in that game, and we end up in eighth. So I think it's so competitive. We knew it was going to be more competitive this year with Bristol coming up. So I think ideally you're looking at that top six at the start of the season, but we were very slow. We often look in chunks of the season, and the first 6 weeks we were missing quite a few players, and like Ashley was banned, Faf was still away with South Africa. They're two big players for us. So it just took us a while to get going, and once we found our rhythm as a team and got used to playing with each other, then now we're lying fifth and six games left of the season, I think. So there's a big opportunity there for us. And as you said before, it starts this weekend away at Newcastle, and they're going to be fighting for everything because they're bottom of the table. And I've been in that situation before, and playing in it's a big game for them. You know, they'll be right up for it. So it'll be a really tough game for us on Saturday. But if you've got any ambition of getting further towards the top four, or the top four team, we've got Bristol, Newcastle, Worcester away. And if you want any ambition of top four club, you need to be winning those games. So we've got a big kind of finish this season.
Yeah, it puts you, if you guys get a good win against Newcastle this weekend, it puts you guys in a really good position going forward, and the confidence that will give you going into the back end of the season is going to be huge.
And I think then we've then played Gloucester, Quins, teams around us at home. It's a big opportunity for us.
Yeah, and also you're still alive in the Challenge Cup, aren't you? Is it a away trip to Connacht?
No, we've got Connacht at home next Friday night, so that should be a good occasion. And then I'm not going to look ahead of kind of where we could go from there, because I think you just got to focus on winning that game. Although the leagues are, I know Dimes it's our bread and butter, but then you know we've got an opportunity in that competition as well. So, and it's at home, so we've got a lot to look forward to, which will be a busy end of the season.
Didn't you guys have a pretty mental away game at Bordeaux, where there was a few cards?
Just before Christmas, we went away and beat them really comfortably. Two red cards, I think, one from both teams. It wasn't kind of a niggly kind of scrappy game. They just saw, because during the European comp this year, you get there's different laws that kind of prevented raising arms into the tackle, so there's a couple of red cards for that kind of thing. So and then they came and turned us over at home, which wasn't a great game, and one I wish I'd forgotten about.
Well, I do apologise. But we're getting onto the squad, so obviously some pretty good big name players in there. Of course, Faf de Klerk up there for World Player of the Year last year. What did you think of him when he first walked into Carrington?
Got a lot of energy. A lot of energy. You see it on the pitch, and he's pretty similar off the pitch. He's always buzzing around, annoying people. So, no, but I don't live too far from him, so I see quite a lot of him. But you see what he can do in training and stuff. And he's obviously very fast. His game's dynamic. He just brings a lot of tempo to our games, and you can tell why he's so tough to defend. And he's you know, when you're worried about him sniping on a breakdown, but yet he can throw a 30-metre pass just out wide, it draws defences in and creates opportunities. So, you know, he's been good for us. You know, he's got that will to win, and he wants to be playing in big games. He wants to be playing in big finals. So, you know, the more guys like that we've got around the squad, the better, really.
And has he drawn maybe a bit of extra attention to Sale Sharks, do you think?
I think that, obviously, it's going to happen, because when you've got a player up for World Player of the Year, I think, to be fair, Faf came to Sale as he wasn't involved in the Springboks anymore. So he's, you know, he's done well to get back into the setup and to be their starting nine. And, you know, he's probably found the benefit of coming over here and kind of getting a name for himself here by playing well. That's drawn more attention onto him for the Springboks, but it's worked the other way. Obviously, you've got a guy for, like I say, player of the year, so, and he's from Sale Sharks, it's going to bring a bit more attention.
Yeah, another big name, of course, Chris Ashton, winger. Obviously had that ban at the start of the season, which we won't really talk about, to be honest. So he's going to come back in the starting lineup, hopefully, at some point soon. Obviously been away with England for a bit, hasn't he, as well? So has he been a miss when he's not been available? Because he looked quite sharp when he
was on the pitch. Yeah, I think he brings... Yeah, he's like... Because he's come from environments where, such as Sarries and Toulon, where winning just becomes a habit. Yeah. So, and he is naturally a very competitive person, as most rugby players are, so... He's just brought this real kind of determination and probably set standards that we hadn't done before in terms of how we train and what's acceptable, really. And he really drives that. So it's good for, especially good for young players coming in, actually thinking they're training well where he doesn't think they are. So it's been good.
So quite an honest character then in the training ground.
Put it that, yeah. That's a kind way of putting it.
And I wanted to ask this question because we saw it last season with... Rohan Jansen van Rensburg came in temporarily, then was re-signed permanently. And then also we're seeing it again with Rob Dupreer coming back. Has that been a new thing that Steve Diamond's tried out by bringing players temporarily and then just thinking they're good enough to play for us all the time?
Yeah, probably. I'm not sure. I think just because obviously AJ got injured and we realised we needed a 10 kind of ASAP, as much as Sam does a good job, but then... You know, ideally, want him playing in centres or fullback. So I think it's worked out quite well, actually. Whether it's he would have done it if there wasn't injuries, I'm not sure. Yeah. But it's worked out well. Rob came in, got used to the way we played really quickly, and then shone for us in a few games, especially that Saracens game. So, you know, he's been really good. He was really good for us, and same with Ruan as well. So they obviously enjoyed the environment as well, and it was easy to get them back.
Yeah, you're obviously building a strong South African contingent within Sale now, and a lot of teams seem to be going down that route, sort of bringing these players in over from South Africa. What do you think they give you guys, sort of from a training point of view, from, you know, with the youngsters coming through?
Probably, well, the majority of them have been internationals, which helps. So they've obviously played at the highest level. So they've probably brought in a bit of that experience and decisiveness when it comes to what they do and how they train, and I suppose that's just, you know, it's better the more kind of high caliber players, and not in terms of names but in terms of where they've played and more experiences of playing around the world, and they might see things in a different way when it comes to training or watching opposition. So it's going to help, and I think for us it's about actually telling them you can't, this work might work on kind of a dry day on the Heidfeld, but when you're playing at the AJ Bell and it's greasy, then you might have to adapt. So it's probably been good for their games as well to get a more broader understanding of when they come over and play Northern Hemisphere rugby. Definitely. Compared to Super Rugby. So it works both ways. They bring over ideas and they probably learn a few things as well. Playing when you've got to play and train at Carrington, it's a bit different.
And that centre, Van Rensburg, he's massive. Did you think he was a forward when he rocked up?
No, I knew he was back, but I started, when he was injured, I started calling him our new prop signing just to wind him up, because he was there.
He must tear up in training. There was a contact session with some of the youngsters. They must learn a few
things. You don't want him running hard lines down the Thames Channel, really, do you? So, not that we do a great deal of contacts, but certainly... I wouldn't fancy tackling it.
So do you not do many contact sessions then? Is it mainly just about getting out on the day?
No, we do kind of one. There'll be one day where the forwards will do a big contact day. It's not obviously not excessive, but I think you've got to get a bit done. And then we'll have a one day where we focus on defence, and that might involve kind of not a great deal, 10, 15 minutes of breakdown work, tackle technique work. So it's especially now with the new laws and the emphasis on the tackle, and you know, you've got to keep practicing these things.
I know, Max, we just talk about defence. Max is a defence coach at Sedge this season, has been AJ McGinty.
Yeah, no, he's brought in a lot of experience, AJ, you know, and he's obviously quite passionate about defence as well. You know, he's been sort of taking the backs through a lot of defensive structures. He's been learning about the forwards' defensive structures as well, to be fair to him. But yeah, he's really passionate about it. And
as a 10, he's not scared of putting his body on the line. He's a really good defensive 10 because he, you know, he gets so low in the tackle and he'll chop. And then, but also, if you watch his defence on the edges, he likes to get up high and he'll read situations quite well. So yeah, he's got a good understanding of the game, AJ. Actually, he's went working with Pat Lam, I think. He came from that kind of, it's quite a structured way of playing, but it's he's got a different way of thinking about the game to what I sometimes do anyway.
Yeah, and this season we've leaked a lot of tries through sort of the backs, and he's been working with our backs religiously, and he, you know, they've really improved from just sort of a couple of months' work with him. So he's give him every credit for that.
Brilliant. And we're going to now move on to previewing this weekend's Premiership action, starting off with tomorrow's game, which is the East Midlands Derby at Franklin's Gardens. And that is a Friday night game, which I found a bit peculiar. But Max, who do you think is going to come out on that one?
I think Northampton are going to get the win there. I think they're going to be coming back from that Premiership Cup win that they got on Sunday. The confidence is going to be pretty high, and they should take that into the Friday game.
Yeah, and Josh, I don't really want to mention this, but you guys had a pretty bad day out in Northampton a few weeks ago now. When they're all firing, are they pretty formidable force?
Yeah, that's probably the worst performance that I've been involved in with at Sale. They, to be fair to them, I think we were very rusty. We hadn't played as a squad for a while, and yeah, they've changed the way they play. I think Chris Boyd coming in from the Hurricanes, I think he was, but he's obviously worked Super Rugby. I noticed that they've been attempting the offloading game a lot more. They're more willing to try and offload, like your 50-50s. They might make mistakes a lot of time, but it's one of those games where everything's stuck that day, and we struggled with Naira Varo, who didn't do a great deal at our place, but down there he was so effective. Even when we did get tackles on him, he was able to offload, and they were just on us all the time. They were beyond, and they put us under pressure, and we just didn't deal with it very well. And yeah, they were up kind of 30 odd points half time, and you think, well, except from the weekend, like in most occasions that's when the game's won. So no, they were impressive that day. Yeah.
And what have we collectively made of Leicester Tigers this season?
Oh, it's been an up and down season for them. They've struggled, you know, with injuries, and they just haven't been able to click, I don't think. I just think they've just been really stop-starty. But, you know, they're always going to be a tough team to play against.
Yeah, and since the last pod, Matthew Tate has had to retire due to injury problems, so all the best in the future for Matt. I think he does some sort of business course at Manchester University. So
I'm similar one to the one I'm doing, actually.
Oh, what are you doing?
I'm doing an MBA in the CEOs in sports and organisations. It's based out of Salford Uni, but run by a private. He does a course. He does the MSc Sporting Director course, I think. So yeah, I think a couple of rugby guys do that course. I'm doing a more business kind of one, but yeah, I think more rugby guys are getting involved in that kind of thing. So
yeah. And there's two games that are at non-rugby grounds this weekend. Saracens are hosting Harlequins at the London Stadium, which is also the home of West Ham United. Actually, a higher table clash than I realised on the last podcast. I didn't realise Quins were third on the last podcast, you see, which was not my finest moment. I'm going to say Quins win.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the Sunday's game in the Premiership Shield, or cup, or whatever they call it. You know, Northampton really got on top of them in that game. So the confidence will be a little bit low. And, you know, Quins are making all these signings and this week that they've made. And they obviously, you know, wanting to sort of turn things around there. So I think, you know, we wouldn't be surprised if Harlequins get a win against them.
Yeah, and moving on, Gloucester hosts Wasps. Danny Cipriani against his old club. First time that Wasps have come down to King's Home since Danny Cipriani signed for Gloucester. Wasps will be bedding in a few guys that are on international duties, so I'm going to say Gloucester by 10.
Yeah, I think that's a...
Yeah, it's a good shout. Another quick preview, Bristol versus Worcester. I'm probably going to say Bristol because I need Worcester to lose. and then the big one, which is Newcastle versus Sale at St James's Park, the home of Newcastle United, my team as well.
Yeah, big game for you, this draw.
I was so happy when they announced the first one and then they won it as well. Like, it was great for Toby Flood as well because he was a ball boy for Newcastle United a few times. Incidentally, I went to the same school as Toby Flood, even though he's 14 years older than me. But very different times. And we've kind of previewed that already, so I'm not even going to predict anything because Josh is bigger than me.
Yeah. And, I'm definitely not going to predict anything.
And finally, Bath travel to Exeter on Sunday afternoon. Bath, of course, a side close to your heart, Max. Yeah.
It's just a West Country derby, you know. It's a massive game for them. Bath have, you know, been a little bit up and down all season, and you know Exeter will want to get a win over there, but it won't be an easy game at all.
Okay, and now we've come to a section that I'm sure Josh has no clue what I'm going to come out with here, which is. What have I called it? I've called it Joe's NFL style free agency. This came off from a text that Max just sent me one day, quite randomly, actually. In that we were talking about the NFL, of course. Odell Beckham's moved to the Cleveland Browns. Are you a big American football fan, Josh?
Yeah, I do. The last 2 years, I've shown a bit more interest in some I watch kind of as much as I can, and I definitely watch like the highlights show, and but more from like. Because I'm doing this course now, from a business point of view, like to keep an eye on like what's going on and what's trending out there from all aspects of the business side. So it is, I do find it interesting.
Yeah, we love it from the media side of things. Yeah. In my opinion, they're leading the way.
Oh, like if you everything I look at in terms of, we did like a marketing module last before Christmas, and you just got to look at everything that they're like. 5 years ahead of what we're doing in Europe in all sports, and you just watch what they're doing in basketball in the NBA and in terms of how they're getting social media into use and what they're doing and how they're trying to grow the sports. It's really interesting.
Yeah, from a media point of view and social media, the fact that they get the highlights up on YouTube within probably 20 minutes,
it's unbelievable.
After a game,
like Super Rugby, the only people rivaling that at the minute that we've seen anyway. Like they're uploading the highlights within 40 minutes of the game ending. That's the. I mean, I watch them in uni lectures on a Friday, to be honest. But so for anyone that doesn't know, free agency is when players are released from their contracts and they get offered money and contract years length, and they get guaranteed money. They get a set wage across X amount of years. So I've done some for some Premiership rugby players. All the players involved are either currently at Premiership clubs or could move to the Premiership clubs. And this is completely made up. So if anyone thinks these are going to happen, if any of these do happen, I get commission.
Yeah, we'll go with that. We'll go with that, Joe.
Cool. I mean, I'm leaving uni. I need something. Yeah. Right. So I've said James Haskell, currently of Northampton Saints, to Gloucester for 2 years and £300,000 per year. I don't know the market rates, Josh, by the way. and 300 grand guaranteed.
Yeah, we just like the guaranteed bit, don't we? Yeah. We just want to make it a little bit more interesting, I think.
Sounds good from a rugby player's point of view.
Yeah, no, definitely. So I think the rugby players would be all for it. But I think the point we're just trying to get across is just, you know, the media side of things and the way the NFL are doing things. I think I'm just surprised that we haven't taken much of what they're doing on board still. I still think we're, like you said, Josh, 5 years behind what they're doing. And, you know, like from the draft point of view and... things like this. There's no reason why we can't take elements of what they're doing and sort of manipulate them a little bit, but that is what it is.
I'm trying to work out my favourite one out of all of these. I'm going to say, because it's very fanciful, Bernard Foley to Newcastle for 3 years, 1.6 million guaranteed.
There you go. He'd be a very happy lad with that, I reckon.
He wouldn't when he got to Newcastle.
in the Championship.
Oh, he's going to love it in the Championship, mate. Oh, you'll get so many points, though.
Yeah.
He'd be absolutely running past bin men for fun. Yeah. That's what I'll say about that. Right, okay. And we're going to talk a bit about Bucks Super Rugby. Of course, Josh and Max, both in this room, played at the highest level of university rugby. Max for University of Bath, Josh for Durham University.
Almost didn't come in today because of what happened yesterday.
I'm just going to let you two just go for it on this one.
you're more up to date in terms of you see more action, but I got the impression that this is going to be a tough day at the office for Durham, and it was.
Yeah, well, it was. I think Bath have always, you know, Bath have been the nearly men for like such a long time. You know, they've really struggled to get to that final, and you know, I think they do deserve to get a final place at Twickenham and get.
Have they not been in a final since?
Don't quote me on it, but I've not seen them in a final.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I can't. Obviously, they've been in semi-finals, but not. But yeah.
So it's good to see them doing well. They've obviously got the link with Bath Rugby is getting stronger and stronger.
Because I think that was similar to kind of what Exeter were like when we were at uni.
Yeah.
In fact, they were like always touted about. Well, because it was North and South back then. Yeah. So they obviously did really well in the Southern League and then just always kind of failed at quarterfinal, semi-final stage. Yeah. And then obviously since we left, they've obviously had the success and they're up there most years now. But that's a link between, if you've got a strong link with a Premiership club, it helps massively.
Yeah, it does. And how many finals was it that you got to?
I did 3-3 when I was there. Yeah. So uni rugby is kind of quite, you go through these periods where universities will be strong and then they just won't get the, it's just
two,
a lot of it,
two, 3 year sort of like periods and then they'll go through like a rebuilding
and I think that's what, yeah, and it's probably, if you probably look over 10 years you have three or four strong years and then you won't see teams kind of 4 or 5 years, they'll be around but they'll never be getting to, you don't see a team getting to sort of six books finals on the run like Cardiff Met got to a lot when I was there, and just before I was there they were just never. They should have beaten us in my first year. How they didn't win that game, I'll never know.
Yeah, they bottled that one massively.
Yeah. And then obviously, even like, look at Loughborough was strong before I went to uni, and then obviously they focus on the national leagues now. So that's.
But anyway. And I think Loughborough in a rebuilding stage as well. Yeah. To be honest, from a national league point of view and from a university rugby point of view, they're obviously sitting pretty fairly low down in National One, and they've had a pretty poor university record this year, but they'll get back up in a couple of years time. They'll get a good batch of university students like you were saying, and then they'll get back up.
Yeah, I think it's what positions get those players in as well. Like we had a strong pack for 3 years when I was at Durham, and I think if you're strong in the, especially in the front five, then that helps massively. And then
strong have a strong line out and set piece, and you've won half the battle probably with university.
Yeah, because we used to get nicknamed Boring Dullum when we were there, because all we did was scrum and drive and maul. But then it was effective because massively. We were good at it. And then I remember in my third year, we didn't have as strong a pack as the previous 2 years. Then we actually like changed the way we played a bit and we're still effective. But yeah, I think if you've got the numbers in those positions at front five, and uni rugby, you're always going to have back row. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, every year, you'll get to trials and everyone's a back row, and you'll have good back row players. So that's never a worry. In like nines, tens, and backs, you usually get good.
Second rows is probably the hardest position for the universities to sort of find.
Yeah,
and I would say, and obviously front row, it's.
Because I think that's where we were lucky, and I was there with. In my
Josh.
Josh Bayford. Yeah, he was our tight head. James Hallam, loose head, who really developed and went up to Newcastle Falcons for a year, London Scottish.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sean Robinson was my second row partner in third year. Obviously, he's a regular now, Premiership player. So, and we had guys like Matt Steele, who played England age groups, and he could have probably gone pro if he wanted to. So we had in those positions, we were lucky. Where, as I say, it just comes in, swings and roundabouts.
So you played a lot of second row then when you were at Durham. And
I played all my rugby at second, and then when I went to Sale, they played me at eight, and then obviously you come with the ability to play second row, but now I'm predominantly second row, I'd say.
Yeah. Which one do you enjoy, or is there one that you do not really mind?
I don't mind. I'm happy. I like to get a good run of games going, and I find it's quite difficult to go one game second row, one game eight.
Yeah,
if you get a good run and build some momentum, then, like I said, I played a lot of second row and quite enjoyed it, so I'd say that for the time being.
So did you two play each other at any point when you were both at U?
Was it Moseley? Birmingham Moseley,
semi-final in 2012, it would have been.
We played on a neutral at Birmingham.
Yeah.
Birmingham Moseley. Yeah. Oh, you got, obviously
lovely
guys got,
setting for a semi-final.
Yeah, no atmosphere whatsoever.
Porter cabins.
Poor cabins. Pitch was a bit of a dump as well,
massive,
if I remember.
Massive slope, I remember. And I think because, I thought we took a lead, like, quite easily, and then you kind of came back. It's quite close in the end, wasn't it? And
yeah, it was close. We'd really struggled with injuries, I think. And going back to the set piece, those guys had an incredible scrum at that time, incredible line out, and you know that's what you dominated us in those areas.
I think we got well ahead of ourselves that year because that was probably our strongest. My second year was our strongest year then, and we turned up to play Harper in the final, who actually on paper hadn't looked like they had a decent year, and they got to the final. And then they were massive. I couldn't believe how big they were. They just battered us for like 80 minutes. And
well, they're even bigger now. We were at Leeds yesterday for Leeds
Cardiff
Met, and the Leeds Beckett lads were mutants. They were massive blokes. Yeah. But that's what you can do when you're a student. We just gym it all the time.
I just think on a whole though. Since I've left, like the student game is so much stronger than what it was when we were there. I mean, you'll agree.
Definitely.
Super rugby, the standard play. I remember I went to watch Durham Loughborough at the start of the year, and there was actually like, I was really impressed, and that was from year on year. I've always gone to watch them year on year, and I've just seen the progression in the standard of play. It's great for the game, that especially great for the university game, that the book Super League is in place now, and there's so many examples of players who go university rugby to straight into Premiership rugby. I think if you look at Dom Brandt this year, he was at uni last year, and
it just gives lads such a good platform to showcase the skills. You know, if you go away from like having a good university season, you know, a back getting 20 odd tries, you know, people will notice that. You know, teams in the Championship, teams in the Premiership will take notice for that. And you know, like these teams, you know, we talk about Bath Uni being with Bath Rugby, Exeter being with Exeter Chiefs. You know, you're a lad that's just coming up the ranks, goes and play, has a good season at university rugby. You know, there's no reason why you can't get an academy contract or get a look in and get an opportunity playing in the A-League. And that's all, you know, a lot of these lads, that's all they want. They just want an opportunity to showcase a talent, and that's what the Super League's done.
And probably more importantly as well, you get degree out of it as well, because I think I sit as the RPA rep for Sale at the moment, and so in terms of a development of a young player, it's, you know, you get a degree and play a good standard rugby, it's perfect. So yeah, I think it's hard because it's like, what's the best pathway? Because the academies do a great job as well in terms of developing players, but and it's difficult because the academies do a good job, and but yet universities do a great job as well. So I think it's like, what's the best?
It's a fine line, you know, it really is. But, you know, university rugby, like Josh was saying, it just gives people the opportunity to focus on their academics and then, you know, focus on their rugby, which is beneficial.
Now, what does that RPA role entail?
So there's obviously, you'd think, 14 clubs who are associated as under the umbrella of the RPA, and I just sit on the board from a represent Sale from the players' perspective. So we have three annual board meetings where we'll discuss topics. Kind of, I'll speak to lads at Sale, say, you know, these are the main points of conversation at the moment in the game that we're going to discuss at the meeting. What are your thoughts on it? And if players have issues in terms of, say, not enjoying 4G pitches, or they're struggling kind of new laws of the game, then I can raise these points at meetings where kind of representatives from the referees are there, from the RFU. So it's interesting. And also we have player development managers, so actually Mike McCarthy, who used to play at Newcastle Connacht, so he's just come on as he looks after Newcastle and Sale, so then he does a job of in terms of player development and putting on networking events for players. So it's just interesting from to see kind of what to stay involved in the game and kind of where, you know, what the issues are at the moment and the way it's kind of moving and
yeah.
Obviously the players, we're the ones performing on the weekend and we're almost the product, so I think it's important that we have a voice. So yeah, that's just where we stand.
And do you think sort of players are so much more aware of it now in terms of looking for university options, looking for career options? Are they, you know, are the majority of the team putting those plans into play?
Yes, I mean, some clubs are proactive at it. And obviously the RPA are very proactive in terms of they put in development programs, yep. Especially for the young guys, but for all players, actually. I still did one this year, even though I've been to uni already. But it's crucial that you're always thinking ahead to the future, because I've had a number of surgeries now, and yep, you don't know when it's only a short career, and you know, most players retire, what was it, early 30s, I suppose, yeah. And so it's a short career. You've got to make the most of it and enjoy it whilst it happens. Definitely. But then there's actually some pretty staggering stats out about with mental, the topic of mental health being so prominent, not just in sport but in the whole society at the moment. There's some pretty staggering statistics out about pro rugby players. Once they stop playing the game, then it's kind of about half suffer from mental health problems, just because the transition from playing the game, and you know, you live a great lifestyle, because we do, being a professional sportsman,
yep.
And then going in back into the real world, it's tough. So I think the RPA, from that point, from kind of players finishing the career, but also from developing and just getting as much kind of qualification or just knowing, you know, what kind of pathway you're going to take post rugby, it's really crucial.
Fascinating stuff. I think we're getting to the end of this. Of course, what I don't think we did mention was that Bath did beat Durham 64 points to 32 in the end.
Yeah, that's, we probably didn't mention the score. Yeah. I did that quite well, actually.
Yeah. I don't know, I feel cheated there.
I haven't seen any of the other results, so
The other results.
I'm quite interested. Who? Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So
we'll put you on the spot there.
That's no, right. Fortunately, I actually do have them. So Leeds Beckett University beat Cardiff Met 27 points to 23. We were at the game.
Yep.
We've just released a bonus Talking Rugby Union podcast where we exclusively talk about the university rugby, touching on the women's game as well, actually. I think the main points from that is we didn't think Leeds were dominant in the forwards. Cardiff had a lot of more forwards dominance. I mean, their line-out was better, their scrum was better.
Yeah, their back row were really impressive for Cardiff. They retained the ball really well, but the outstanding players for Leeds Beckett were the two wingers, who just took their chances and scored some really good tries.
Yeah, Chester Duff and Will Lewin.
Who's favourites this year then for Bucks?
For Bucks.
So the semi-finals are.
Yeah, the semi-finals are Bath have to travel to Hartbury and Exeter host Leeds Beckett. So it could realistically be just Hartbury Exeter.
Yeah, like we were saying, you know, Bath going with a lot of confidence, but going to Hartbury, you know, that 64 win doesn't really mean much going down to Hartbury and playing in the semi-final for Bath, you know, where they'll be really nervous because they've not got to that final. So you wouldn't be surprised if Hartbury turned them over there. The big one, I think, with the Exeter Leeds Beckett one is, you know, Leeds Beckett won't be. They'll just go down there and play, and Exeter will be nervous with that result against Cardiff.
Did they start the season off quite slowly, Leeds Beckett, and just
hit four? How many on the bounce? They're nine on the bounce now.
10 unbeaten now.
Well, that's perfect, because you want to go. I mean, Exeter will be nervous about that, because you got a team in form coming down, and all the pressure's on you at home semi-final. You've been they won the league, didn't they? So
yeah, just about. I mean, they've been stuttering and starting.
It's not a good.
It's
not a nice situation to be in. We were with that Durham during the quarterfinals, what it used to be, when we used to start playing the teams from the south, and it was kind of like, you know, we'd have Cardiff coming up, and it'd be a quarterfinal where we were expecting to win, and we'd never played well. So it'll be tough.
Yeah, and Leeds Beckett are quite an abrasive and hostile team, to be fair. They get really stuck into you. So going down, that's what you need when you go down to Exeter. You need to get stuck into them early doors.
Chat on the sidelines. Yeah, as some well,
very hostile.
Stages. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
I used to love that about university. We used to play Northumbria at Kingston Park, and it was. Yeah, it's always good.
You get the third and the thirds and the fourths down. They're all having a beer, enjoying themselves.
They're all. I'm just doing that so I can tag them, really.
Yeah. No, they're. You get some good crowds. You get a good crowd down at the university games. You know, they get stuck into you, and that's what you want.
I remember in Kings Park, I remember because they were all lined up on the side by the change room side, and I just, there's like a little scuffle that broke out on the sideline, and I just looked up and some student has poured his whole pint over my head.
I remember going down to playing at Sandy Park against Exeter in the varsity game, we were calling it then, and they got the thirds and the fourths just standing in the tunnel, and as we were running out on the pitch, they were just chucking beer on us, just getting stuck into us, and you're like, right, this is going to be a long day.
I find it interesting in both those examples, they're throwing beer, and everyone yesterday was drinking dark fruits.
Yeah, they were all.
How times change. Yeah. But yeah, so I think I predicted a Bath Leeds Beckett final.
I went Hartbury Leeds, didn't I?
Yeah, you predicted Bath to lose.
Yeah, I did predict that, but I just think.
I predicted Durham to lose yesterday. Yeah. I'll tell Keezy that as well.
But. Yeah.
So who do you think out of those, Josh, from what we've given you a brief summary of?
Exeter. I might go Exeter Bath, actually. Go on.
Have a good little final of that.
Yeah. They were pretty, from what I saw in the game yesterday, they looked pretty, as you say, we're talking about being good up front. Bath looked pretty strong.
Yeah, they've got solid front row by the looks of it. Obviously, the hooker.
Yeah,
he'd come back from injury, dislocated his shoulder by the looks of it, which really is horrible. And he's been, you know, he's been a standout player for them, so we hope a speedy recovery for him. But that will have an impact on the team going into the semis.
I might change that.
One player that played really well as well was London Irish's Austin Hay. He's at Bath as well, so, and he obviously plays across the front row, so he was really good as well. He got a try in the end.
Yes, I think I saw. Yeah, I saw him. Was he any relation to, how do you spell his last name?
Hay.
All right, no, it's different. He looks very much like a guy we had at Durham.
Oh, right.
Yeah, called Nick Hayes, but obviously not related. But he looks a bit an image, actually. So.
Yeah, he's been playing really well, getting on the score sheet, which is always good for a prop. So got to take him when you can.
Yeah, and we're going to now just tail off everything with talking about something that feels like a long time ago now, which was the end of the Six Nations. We'll briefly gloss over Italy losing to France at the Stadio Olimpico.
I didn't see that game anyway, so I can't offer much.
No.
I unfortunately saw it. It was 14 points to 25 in the end. France were just better.
Right.
Italy would have been disappointed, though, not to pick up a result.
They were
there,
keen. They looked a lot more keen in the first half, and I think in the second half, France just were a bit. Were just wanted
just
to beat
enough
them.
To.
Yeah. Which is sometimes all it takes. Wales, very convincingly. Beat Ireland. I think it was 25-7 in the end. Josh, did you catch that one?
Yeah, I watched that game. That was, like Wales were just. Well, obviously they had. Although Ireland had still had a lot to play for, but when you got a Grand Slam to play for, they were just more dominant in everything they did, and it was just quite ironic how was it? Did Ireland ask for the roof to be left open?
Yes, they did. Yes.
And yet Wales played the conditions much better and were more dominant in the forward. So I found that actually. Yeah, that was they obviously it's kind of one of them where Wales just did a good job and kind of professional performance, and Ireland were pretty ordinary, to be fair. They were, you know, they didn't offer much really, did they?
They looked like they didn't, you know, they just was one step behind the Welsh all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if that's how it felt, and like set piece, like Wales disrupted their line out, kind of key areas, key points during the game, and obviously. Sexton couldn't control the game as he usually does, and you know they just struggled. They just felt like they were on the back foot.
Wales were always going to win the game, though, in my opinion. They were never going to lose that one in Cardiff for the Grand Slam. It was, you know, they were always going to get the victory.
And the tone was set very early on with that when they took the, was it a restart or was it the actual kickoff when they just bundled the Ireland player into touch and got the line out straight away.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just when you're away from home, it's the last thing you want to be. Really get the crowd would have been, well, they were vocal anyway, but then that just really kind of, you know, then you kind of think, oh, you're under a lot of pressure there.
And I'd just like to profess my love for Alan Wynne-Jones, if that's okay.
Oh, after the putting the
oh no, Rory Best did that last week.
Oh, and he
did that the week before, and no one talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of football players do that. So when I saw that, I was like,
this one.
It's just like a normal thing to do. Oh, there's a cold child. But no, he was injured and he played.
I can't remember who I was watching with, but I was like, oh, could he? When you get an injury and you drop the ball immediately, it's usually because that's what he did. He kind of went down and just dropped the ball completely. I was like, that looks a nasty one. But I think you can actually see him say, I'm not coming off like straight away when he's talking to the physio. And
I mean, the guy's 33 and he plays every minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. He's played all the minutes. Obviously, he gets looked after at the Ospreys, but he's played all the minutes. Played all the minutes this 16. He's been immense for them. Like, just as from a leadership perspective, you can tell it's someone that.
Everybody looks up to him. Everyone in that team looks up to him.
I look up to him. I'm not in the team.
Yeah, and he's just a great guy to have as your captain, and someone that's going to just lead you into those tough games. And he's proven that in getting the Grand Slam at the age of 33. Yeah. So
very impressed by Wales. Congratulations! Yeah. 270,000 people on the streets of Cardiff after that game as well. Apparently, not one incident reported to the police. Apparently,
a few sights there. Though.
Yeah.
Right, and then the final game of the Six Nations was the Calcutta Cup game, in which Scotland took the Calcutta Cup home yet again because of a 38-all draw. England at one stage winning 31-0.
Yeah,
bizarre.
Well, yeah, where can you start with it? Really, it was a great first half by England.
Yeah, so I predicted the first half. I thought I'd come out, and I just think Scotland were on the back of it. They're probably a bit down after the Wales game, and I thought if England come out hard and hit them hard early, then it could be. They could score, as they have been doing, 3 or 4 tries in the first 20 minutes, which is what happened. Because England over the last year have been very strong. They've been strong early on in the games and they've come out firing. And then, obviously, at half-time, I just did not predict what was going to happen.
No, I think everyone, all English fans, were pretty shell-shocked. But Scotland just came out of the blocks in the second half and just played with no fear and just...
How much of that was down to Finn Russell?
Oh, I think a lot of it's down to Finn Russell. We've talked about him in the podcast before. He's one of my favourite rugby players. I think the way he plays the game with a smile on his face, he chucks the ball around, he plays with such massive confidence. You know,
maybe that's why, because he had nothing to lose. I think they spoke at half time and said, all we want to do is win the second half. So they probably themselves didn't think they were going to get into any position of winning the game. They probably had nothing to lose, and he's just like, you know what, I'm going to go out and start trying to run the show now and try a few things. And, you know, even look at the little box kick that Ali Price did, you know, a lot of times that might not come over. They've obviously done their analysis and seen, like, England leave plenty of space just behind in that middle part of the pitch, but even little things like that, everything just came off and in a space of about 15 minutes, and fair play to them, they took their opportunities and, you know, set up for a pretty exciting second half and game.
Yeah, and do we think that maybe England switched off thinking that they had such a big lead going into half time?
I'm pretty sure they probably did switch off, to be honest, with that sort of such a big half.
Because when you're in those positions, the first thing you mention straight away is, you know, the game's not over. So straight away, it's already been put in the players' minds that it's not your usual chat that you give at half time about when you're so far ahead, but you start almost mentioning it more and start reiterating the fact that the game's not over and we've got to do the same again, kind of thing. So even players are thinking that there's something a bit different here, like we're so far ahead that. But, you know, they were so far ahead against France as well, and, you know, came out and didn't let France get close. Yeah. So maybe they did.
You had a lot of reporters and journalists coming out after the game saying, oh, it wasn't a mental issue. It wasn't a mental issue why they lost that and stuff like that. From a player's point of view, it's a complete mental thing. You know, it's them switching off. It's once Scotland got the ball rolling, getting a couple of tries, in your head you're thinking, we could lose this. And then that just goes through the whole team. And it was pretty evident that was...
But to be fair to England, they played well in that first half and they were trying a few things, like everything that they tried, all the offloads were coming off. So they probably thought, well, we've enjoyed that first half, we played really well, playing some really good rugby, we'll do the same second half. And where they probably, in hindsight, like, well, we might have tightened things up, you know, focus on more of exit strategy, put them further back in their pitch and make them run out a bit more. But it's hard to say. I mean, they're probably obviously not expecting what happened to happen, but they're probably I know it's cliche and they should say after, but at least they have, they probably know what to do differently now.
And to be fair, they got the, with George Ford getting that try, they were still switched on to get that try over the line, so give him a little bit of credit for getting that, getting the draw in it.
Yeah, and George Ford just looked quite sharp when he came on as well.
Yeah, he did. Look, I think there was, I think Eddie Jones could have put him on a lot earlier in that game. I don't see the harm in doing that. You know, Farrell's obviously had a great Six Nations, but in a position like that, I think bring him on after 50 minutes and let him have a go. You know, I think the injury to Ben Moon after 4 minutes wasn't ideal, because I think Genge, the front row were blowing after towards the end. They were really, you know, Ellis Genge was blowing. It was just a great spectacle all in all.
Yeah, and Josh, you've been part of a couple of those England camps, haven't you? What's it like under Eddie Jones?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You know, you jump up from kind of Premiership, playing at your Premiership club, training where you train so much together that, or like just the way training is, you know, the intensity goes up in training because there's more competitiveness. So, yeah, I mean, it's high pressure situations because you're representing your country at international level. So, you know, it's intense. It's tough work when you're down there. But I think, you know, everyone there is geared around kind of, they want to win the World Cup. So it's a big 6 months now. You've only got, was it three or four warm-up games? So that's
I
it.
I think it's four, yeah. And that's that it, might be including the Barbars game.
Well, yeah, but yeah. I can't imagine the way that, I don't know how, I mean, it might be different, but the way that players will need off-season time, I don't know if that will fit in with their plans for that Barbarians game. I'm not sure. So
no, I believe Jim Mallinson's taking charge of it, so he might just select. Might be in charge of selection.
Yeah, because so. I played. So when the last World Cup came around, I played in the Barbarians game that year, and it was a mixture. There was only kind of four or five guys who were in the World Cup squad who played in that game. They were all guys coming back from injury. I think like Brooksy and Joe Launch we played, but they had all been injured at some point during the season for quite a long time. So I think they played the game and then had 3 weeks off and then were straight into the camp. So I can't imagine you've got to have 5 weeks off now. I know this was before that, so I don't know what will happen really.
Yeah, so those Barbars games, good fun, do you think?
Obviously I played in three of them now, so yeah, they're always good games from the neutral perspective. But last year was pretty tough because it's always so hot as well at that point in the year. I don't know why, but last 2 years have been so humid and hot that you just, it's a tough one at the end of the season.
Yeah, and I think Farrell actually might be playing the Barbars at some point.
Yeah, they are, Centenary, so yeah, that'll be good, great occasion for the club.
Yeah, that'd be good down at the Woodlands. Right, I think that's everything we have to talk about for today. I'd like to say a big thank you to Josh for coming down to the TRU offices today and giving us his time.
No worries, yeah, enjoyed it, and keep up the good work, enjoy, well, obviously I'm hopefully get another column out soon, so
yeah, definitely,
it's been good.
Thank you to Max for joining us as well as our very own Chris Hill.
Yeah, I just stepped in at the end there. Cheers, Joe.
That's all right. Yes, that's all from us for now. Follow us all on social. Actually, this is what we should do. Josh, where can people find you on Twitter and Instagram?
Yeah, Twitter, oh, this is a test of memory, at Josh Beaumont 1, I think, and Instagram Josh Beaumont 392 is my tag, so yeah, give us a follow for some real interesting, not interesting stuff.
And we're actually going to be able to ask Max Ashcroft where we can find him on Twitter, because as of today, he's back on Twitter, ladies and gents.
I'm back on Twitter. Max _ Ashcroft is my Twitter.
Back imaginative.
Back after probation.
Yeah. So my account got blocked, though. Straight.
Yeah, his account got blocked 5 minutes in.
I don't know what went on there, but yeah, you'll be getting... Yeah, we're getting a lot of that Twitter account, that's for sure.
You can find Chris at C_Heal on both Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, and you can find me at JoeHarvey34 on both Twitter and Instagram too. But of course, Talking Rugby Union can be found at Talking Rugby Union on Instagram, at Talk Rugby Union on Twitter, and just type in Talking Rugby Union on Facebook to find us there. Give us a like. Live show will be coming back this Saturday after a break. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time.